Hello, you're listening to Spoiler
Filled
Film
Conversation.
Hooray! Oh dear.
Yeah.
So, this week, the podcast is going to tackle the film Xanadu. I'm Richard Nicholas, hello. With me to tackle this beast is Anthony Evans.
Howdy.
Jamie Thomas.
And
Abigail Bain.
Hello.
And if you're not getting the hint, it's that Jamie in particular is unsatisfied with what we had to chat about this week, or what we have to chat about this week. So it was Anthony's pick, so let's find out why he picked.
You're welcome. You're welcome, guys. Please don't all thank me at once. But yes, this week's film is Xanadu, and it is a musical fantasy from 1980 about a disillusioned artist named Sonny, who is played by Michael Beck, who is inspired by an enigmatic woman named Kira, who is played by Olivia Newton-John, into opening a roller disco with an ex-big band leader, Danny Maguire, who is played by the legendary Gene Kelly. However, as Sonny and Kira's feelings for each other grow, Kira is forced to reveal her mysterious identity, which puts their relationship in doubt. It was directed by TV, movie, and documentary maker Robert Greenwald, and it was written by Richard Christian Danis and Mark Reed Rabel, based on a 1947 musical film called Down to Earth.
Was it which really? Itself, I didn't know that.
Yeah, which itself is a sequel to another film called Here Comes Mr. Jordan.
Holy shit.
Oh, was that about the basketball player, or...?
No, it's about dead people. I think they actually remade both of those films recently with Chris Rock. I think it was called Down to Earth.
Yeah.
Where he dies and then he's put into the body of a like an old rich white man. But that's not this film. This is the sequel to that film.
Is it all?
So where to begin with the problems with what Anthony just said?
Well,
I think my first problem came when he said enigmatic.
No. I have not a problem. I think we're a few sentences away from the entire script being said then, because that almost tells you the whole story.
I wanted to put the word muse in, but then it's like, well, you don't have to watch the film anymore. Yeah. There it is.
I think the synopsis actually explains the plot a lot better than the fucking film itself.
Yeah, so
I will preface this by saying that this film alone was the inspiration for the Golden Raspberry Awards being made.
And how many suicides though?
if that Countless. Doesn't tell you all you need to know about the film, wow. There you go.
So it's a bit of a turkey to get to be going on with. We like mediocrity often. Sometimes we like greats, and sometimes we like, you know, lows.
There are one or two things of redeemable quality in this film.
There are,
Gene Kelly.
For me, like, I see potential there. I see a lot of potential on screen, and yet it is such a car crash.
That's the thing. I think that's why you feel so horrible by the end. It was because there are so many points where it could have worked and then it didn't.
At all.
I don't know, we collectively as Spoiler Filled, but also individually as people have all seen some really terrible films. Mm-hmm. But like for me personally, this was something else entirely. I can't even the awful ones that I've picked, like Super Mario Brothers or whatever, this was on another level. Like this, this took it beyond a shit film to how did any of this happen? And there's so much tragedy tied up in it. It was Gene Kelly's last film. Tragedy number one. Number two, it was supposed to be Olivia Newton-John's breakout as a solo performer.
Ooh.
It prematurely ended the career of the bloke who played Swan in The Warriors.
The other tragedy, it's the only film that Olivia Newton-John has ever had solo top billing in.
And it features roller skating at length. So. Oh.
Yeah, the other tragedy is the film itself.
So wait, before we rip into it, let's find out what was the? I mean, you said you it's had some potential, Anthony. But like, when did you first come across it? What? Why is it? Why is it a film for you that comes? You know, why did you present it to us? I guess is what I want to know.
Why did you do this?
Not a why did you do this? I hate you. Why? What is about this film that you wanted to have us, you know, look at?
I'm ashamed to admit it, but I knew of its quality before coming into this, and I don't know. It's I've never heard anyone else ever talk about this film, and it needs to be talked about.
Well, it's like when someone's you know, molested as a child, it's better just to not mention it, and everyone just move on and not let it traumatize you.
Yeah, so I the first time I came across this film was like must have been about 15 or 16, and I just found it one day randomly in like a VHS collection in my house, and it was like
as if left there by a muse.
What is this? And it's just like a big pink VHS called Xanadu, and it had like Olivia Newton-John and Gene Kelly, and it's like, how can I not watch this? And then
it's like Pandora's box.
Proceeded to watch it, and even at that kind of age, I'm like, what the hell was that?
You say that it's like Pandora's box, but to me, it's more like the puzzle box in Hellraiser.
That's probably true. And I don't know, it's just kind of lived with me for like since then for different reasons, because
like a true
it's technically my first kind of introduction to ELO, which this should never be anyone's first introduction to ELO.
You're quite a fan of ELO in particular. Like you genuinely like ELO quite a lot, right?
Yeah, I do. I think they're like probably like since the Beatles, probably one of the best kind of pop rock bands to ever happen.
What a statement.
That is quite a statement.
And yeah, they're brilliant. Oh, well, Jeff Lynne, who is essentially ELO. And like this does feature some of like their best songs. All over the world. And it does them no justice.
No.
Well, we mentioned we were doing this film to Abby's mum, and I think her summing up of the whole film was it's terrible. Oh, no, it's hopeless, but the music's good.
Hopeless is such a perfect word.
But it's, I don't know, it's kind of fascinated me in the way that you can't look away from like
it's like rubber-necking
car crash.
Yeah, it's rubber-necking at a car crash, yeah.
I mean, there's so many elements to it, like... Just, it's
are there?
So...
There's not that many elements. No, mainly singing, dancing, and
just how boning. Like I see what you're trying to do, I suppose, but I don't know, how can something with this kind of much money fail so badly?
So Abby, what was your expectation going in? Because Anthony, you know, he discovered it. I think he was the one who showed it to you and I, or told us about it or something. So we knew it through Anthony, and we'd seen it once before, maybe.
I think I had the exact same thing that Anthony did, only I was in his room and I looked at his shelf and then went, what is this? And he told me, and I went, well, I have to watch this now. So it's that thing where on the surface, when you just hear about what it is, you think you've found a unicorn or something.
Yeah.
Well, then you watch it and go, no, I found the leprechaun from Leprechaun.
Well, it's weird as well, because also it's one of those words that doesn't spell like you think it's going to spell. It's like what the hell is that X doing? It's clearly a Z for Xanadu, right? No, X's and bullshit like that. Awful title. Like, just for confusing illiterate people like me anyway. Okay, Jamie, what... You hadn't seen this before now, right?
No, it's... This is one of those films that I have heard about forever. I remember seeing references to this film, like the title and jokes about it years and years ago. I mean, when I was probably about 13 or 14, I would read like movie magazines and stuff, like Total Film or whatever. And every now and again, Xanadu would drop in there somewhere. But I never found an explanation for what exactly it was, other than it was notoriously terrible, and it had Olivia Newton-John in it, and it was a musical. That's all I've ever known. So when this came up as a choice, I kind of thought, well, I finally get to find out. And I didn't know what to expect. I knew it was going to be very 80s.
Yeah.
And I knew it was going to be shit.
Yeah.
But it's... You know, in Event Horizon, when they have the... First of all, they get, like, the sound clip of the old crew that's all scrambled and garbled and weird sounding, and they're like, what the hell was that? That's me hearing about Xanadu. Then the scrambled footage where it's all, like, blocky colours and they can't work out what's going on, that's me agreeing to watch it. And then me watching it is the crew on the Event Horizon finally seeing the unscrambled footage of what happened to the original crew. And then my reaction is Lawrence Fishburne going, we're leaving. Like, that's the best way I can sum up my entire experience. Okay. It was like, I knew it was going to be very neon and colourful, but I really wasn't prepared. I was ready.
It's like being assaulted with a kaleidoscope in your ears.
There's something about a vacuum of story that really disorientates you as a viewer. Because you could put up with pretty much anything else as long as you could follow what's going on. But in this, it was just, we're having a musical number, then we're going to say six words, and then we're having another musical number.
And what I said about the synopsis actually summing up better, because the film has no momentum whatsoever.
Nope.
It's just people say things and go...
And now this. And now this.
it literally just goes, all right, I'm bored of that scene now. Let's have some dancing. And this is one of the things that stuck out to me as a... I don't know if it's too early to talk about it, but the musical numbers, like the dance numbers, are filmed so badly. Yeah. Why is the cameraman amongst the dancers so that the viewer can't fucking see them dancing?
Also, they rely on this idea. There's like a couple of locations they have that are complete bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, they have a recording studio, which I thought was a music recording studio, not a... Like, maybe it was a video... Like, video shoot place, but I thought it was a recording studio. It's like an empty black room, and they just seem to dance around a set. Sets keep appearing. And you're like, what the fuck is this endless black space with everything in? And then later on, they're in a venue that Xanadu, the club, is going to be.
Yeah.
And that's just an empty black space where shit happens in. And it's like, you're just in an empty black studio doing this. Why is it so crap?
Oh, God. My example of one of the and now this scenes, and I can't remember what it was, but just the start of the film. There's this long, dull section of a guy just painting, and then he tears it up and throws it out the window, and then the long floating across shot of the shreds of his painting. And then
the same thing that happens for, like, Mary Poppins. That's how she's... Like, you send torn up bits of paper out into the wind, and they grant you your muse / Mary Poppins.
The moment... Maybe it's... And it's only, like, maybe 5 minutes into the film. That says a lot there, that 5 minutes of the beginning of this film is a guy painting and then getting annoyed with it and throwing it out the window. But then we get to the mural. And the mural comes to life, and that was the point where I thought, I'm in over my head here. I felt like a young man in, like, the 70s in America who'd enthusiastically signed up to join the army and then ended up in a jungle in Vietnam and suddenly thought, uh-oh, this is a lot worse than I thought.
There's a lot less pastels in Vietnam, though.
True, but... the way they all danced out of the mural, and I thought, oh my god,
that was probably the most boring part.
Yeah, but
that.
But with that, it's like later on they at least try and have it so that there are a lot of people going. Oh no, actually, I'm wrong. With the bit where she was on her own, just singing, that was the most boring.
Right, it had second most boring part.
But I want to say something before I forget. That, you know, the point where he tears up the paper and throws it out of the window?
Yeah.
Rich and I have a film theory that that's the point where he has a drug overdose, and everything that happens after that is we're seeing the inside of his head.
Yeah. It stands up. A lot of the stuff that happens is very incredible. And not just the magic, you know, muse thing, but actually meeting an old man on a rock and him playing like a clarinet or whatever, and then him offering you half of his business for no reason. Because like some Australian bint has given you an idea to sell a club. It's like, what? That's preposterous.
The whole setting up of the Xanadu nightclub was done on the basis of, let's make it. All right, you're my partner. Good.
Yeah, well, the whole thing.
There was no investment in it. There was no, where did they get the money from?
Well, the guy was rich. Whatever. I could tell you the whole plot because there's so little of it to hold the film together. It's, you know, I guess the guy's an artist. He does shitty, like, airbrush and paint. Like, he does shitty 80s art.
Yeah.
And he does it for a music studio. I mean, that detail's almost irrelevant. He is struggling. He's not happy in his job. He throws some old artwork out the window. That makes a graffitied image of women come to life. One of them is a muse who inspires him, and she is there to inspire him to get an old man to invest in a music venue, to start a music venue, which they do. It's called Xanadu.
Yay.
It puts on really over-the-top, extraordinary shows that must cost more than the people who come. Hardly any people can come because it's so many people performing.
And all it is
insane, and then that's it.
The point that I got to where I... Because it actually... I think it. I admire my staying power that as much as I hated the film, I didn't get angry until the very last musical number. And it was when they were roller skating around in a circle and then just like going, ho, and punching forward. And like, for some reason, that made me furious. Like, I wanted to throw shit at the wall at that point, break stuff.
The only other thing I can think happens plot-wise is the guy falls in love with this mysterious muse he's met, and there's a bit of argy-bargy because at some point he jumps into a painting, again like Mary Poppins, and has basically a weird chat in Tron with Zeus, and basically Zeus and Zeus's wife bicker and decide whether their daughter can hook up with a guy one more time. And it's like, wait, so a guy falls in love with a goddess, and like, but it doesn't really matter because they don't really answer any questions on that one. They just kind of have the club open and then imply that she might be real now. Not even that, really. It's very hard to understand that at the last bit where it's like...
She explodes and then she's a waitress. The end.
Yeah. No. She's also the ex of... Gene Kelly's character.
Well, yeah,
like she's this timeless muse who fucks guys and then leaves them.
Yeah, and ruins them. And leaves them lonely and depressed forever.
And is a total bitch about it all the way through the film. Mm-hmm. Just like denying everything or just not answering anyone's questions.
Yeah.
Disappearing. Forcing a guy to roller skate off a pier.
No, he didn't roller skate. He drove a motorbike off a pier.
Yeah, that's right.
Right, okay.
Which he just acquired off some women. It's like, I'm taking this now. Yeah, okay.
They're like, Abby, you had a good theory about that, though, didn't you?
It doesn't belong to them. He said, I'm taking this, and they were like, yeah, whatever. Don't mind.
Yeah, like two ladies, three motorbikes. It wasn't their one. What do they care?
There's so much. And I think it's impossible to actually work through this film in a, you know, this, then this, then this way. Because
what is happening is we've got a nice pinata in the shape of Olivia Newton-John. And we've all got our sticks and we're beating the crap out of it. And we're just flailing at every ass. We're just so angry. We can't even control ourselves.
I want to bring something up, though, that is that bit where he goes through the mural onto her side. That's the ultimate point of betrayal. Because you go... ooh, this might actually get interesting for a minute. Yeah. And then it gets inconceivably dull.
He doesn't do anything. He's just trapped in a weird Tron world.
And then they go, bye. And then she, like Anthony said, she looks at the camera and sings for like half an hour. While
nothing
the same
happens.
No, the same animated GIF neon background goes over and over again.
Like, they at least some of the abysmal music... like the scenes had a choreographing to them. Okay, so say something positive. And obviously there'll be lots of negative. No. I was going to say, there's one scene I thought showed some creativity, and it still sucked, and there was plenty wrong with it. But like when they had the kind of feuding option, like when they anyway, we'll get to the club, but they're in the club, they're deciding what type of music should play, and they've got like 50s or 40s music, and they got 80s. I say 80s. It's not like any 80s music I'd ever seen. But like they have 80s music and 40s music, and they kind of do a kind of battle for who's going to be in the club, and they merge together the two stages. That was like, oh well, this is, at least is a concept. We're seeing a visual concept come together.
At least there is an idea here.
Yeah, it's choreographed. The music eventually, after they play endlessly their own songs for a while,
it goes on for so long.
Like a little bit of back and forth would have been okay, but they actually, it's about 10 minutes of the '40s, 10 minutes of the '80s, and now we're combining the songs anyway. But that was almost kind of interesting, right?
It was, until they actually combined, and then instead of them going together really well, it was just this cacophony of shit. Two ugly, horrendous versions of different eras collided with each other.
Mm. And then they kind of agree that that's what it should be. And you go, no. I mean, for one, the 40s was much better. Like, in terms of what we saw, there was much better music, it made sense. The 80s was just, well, I don't know what this is. This is like the Royal Variety has been sick on itself.
As soon as I saw that, I was like, this is the worst part of the 80s incarnate.
Why the hell do you want orange suit jumpsuits?
I love the way he said that, like, yeah, rock and roll.
That isn't rock and roll, mate. That's
it was like,
mess.
Whoever was writing this film wasn't really a fan of heavy metal, but
they
wanted
like Queen
to,
a little bit.
Yeah, so they watched 3 Judas Priest videos and were like, I kind of get it.
Even that was kind. It's like, you so know this was, the whole film was written in one drunken evening.
What they should have done with the script is tore it up and threw it out the window so that better thing would happen.
That's another thing that, you know, makes sense when you find out and watch the film, is that the script was being written as they were filming it. Wow. And I thought, yeah, of course it fucking
makes
was.
Sense.
Yeah.
What script, though? What did they write?
Exactly.
They wrote it, they go, so we've come out of the... So the lovely Aussie neon lady is singing. What then? Another back-to-back music, like, video set. It was basically several music videos in a row, none of them with particularly inspiring visuals.
Presumably, the composer was the only one handing anything in.
Yeah. The writers were like, I don't know, they roller skate? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's just so... Speaking of roller skating, actually, that's something I wanted to bring up. When she vanishes on him, and he's like, oh, she's gone forever, and there's, like, 5 straight minutes of him mournfully roller skating.
Oh
around.
My god.
In tiny shorts.
That's
what made it wrong.
That's creepy.
Oh god. It just.
It's all the way through this film is just long shots of nothing happening very slowly.
Well, let's look at this main character, the guy. What's his name? Do we know his name?
Sonny.
Sonny, right. Yeah. To suit his disposition in life, because all he does is fucking whinge. I hate being a freelance illustrator, even though that's not what he is. He's a paid illustrator by the man. Like, and he's like just enlarge. He's doing the job of a photocopier, just enlarging artwork for display. And he's not happy, and he just mourns.
And isn't he just the worst? I'm quitting my job. Oh, I'm coming back, and you're just going to have to deal with it. But I'm still going to be really cantankerous all the way through, and I'm going to mess with everything, and I'm going to totally ruin everything, and you're going to be fine with it, and you're still going to try and keep me in.
Do you know
some
what?
Sense
given the
me.
Circumstances, his boss was really nice.
That's what I was going to say. Just as a brilliant example of how stupid this film is it tries to present his boss like a villain, but his boss is 100% spot on in the right. The way he's saying, "Oh, stop dicking about and actually do your job." Fucking yeah. He's right.
And also,
like, this guy's a cunt. Just fire him.
The guy is, and he's just like, oh, well, Da Vinci was just a genius, but I'm fast. It's like, well, he's already comparing himself. Oh, you're like Da Vinci, are you? You're not like Da Vinci. And yes, you're fast. That's why you're employed. What's wrong with that? That's fine. You can
it's
always,
also why you're
you know,
a frustrated
improve.
Artist, because you rush stuff and you're shit.
And you just can't.
You. you're lucky to have a job.
Yeah, I can tell you, like, I'm in a similar position to him. I'm a freelance illustrator. I'd love to have a lovely collaborative studio with lots of other artsy people to work with. I'd enlarge some shit for people and I wouldn't fucking moan.
He was, yeah, you're right, actually, that made me furious without even realising it. His job seemed great.
It's much easier than being creative anyway. Like, if you just go, okay, make this bigger, that leaves you with more time to come up with your own ideas. Mm, I haven't got any. Mm. All I can do is copy pictures of Olivia John because I fucking want to hump her or something. Like, actually, the first big what the fuck is going on is the idea. So he's giving a rather crap, boring-looking an album cover without even the artist on. Like, he doesn't say what music it is.
Yeah.
I guess this record that he's meant to enlarge for the promotion of blank and the blanks.
You've missed a bit.
Oh, go on.
Well, like, the very first thing that happens is she deliberately skates into him, kisses him, and then fucks off.
Yeah, yeah, I know. And he just goes, oh, that was weird.
like any normal person, you would be like, well, I've got to find them again. If they would kiss me upon bumping into me, can you imagine what they do once I get to know them? But, so anyway, like, yeah, he meets this muse that came to life from a painting because no reason at all. Like, and loads of other muses shot off around the world. I wonder if their stories were any better. Maybe she inspired a mechanic to open a hair salon or something.
What all those muses did was make people in different countries make the shittest films.
They shot off and some guys go, I don't have to be a crap dentist anymore. I could be a crap movie producer.
Yeah. I'm going to make a roller skating dental practice.
But like, so a bunch of fucking muses come to life, bore us to death, and are covered in neon lights and shit.
Oh, God.
And one in particular thinks it is her duty as some kind of weird god to make a guy quit his job as an artist to become a club runner. Because, like, which is more creatively fulfilling? Painting art or just run being the owner-operator of a shit venue?
That's what I get. Like, what interest does Zeus have in a roller disco?
Well, not Zeus, in fairness. Zeus is bitch daughter.
But Zeus sent her specifically to get them to open Xanadu.
Yeah. No, yeah, she's right. That's why she's there. And then she falls in love with him because. And then Zeus goes,
also, of all the causes in the world, it's not like it's even a town going, oh, if only the kids weren't. Like, you know, maybe establish the town is full of, like, hoodlums. Like, they're all little kids. They have nothing to do. They're robbing cars. They're doing evil graffiti as opposed to lovely graffiti and being a nuisance. But they have this venue to go to and listen to great roller skating music.
A muse to come down from above and go, hey, you need to build Dr. M's. That's a very regional specific joke.
Very too niche, if anything. But like, it's essentially just, wait, yay, some yuppie kids who like 80s music and 40s music can come and be amused for like the price of admission. I mean, what a crap thing to inspire. But nevertheless, all it is essentially is like the thing I wanted to get to is she appears in the artwork, roller skating through the artwork, and then he's like, oh, well, where did this woman come from? And the guy's like, I don't know, if we didn't pay her, she can't have existed or whatever. Like, and then it's like, go and ask the photographer. First of all, the thing wasn't a photograph. We see the building, it's run down. This guy didn't take it in the past. It's like an airbrushed artwork. Like, the photographer, nothing. Like,
what he said as well was, I don't know, she's in the frame. It's one of the best pictures I've ever taken. Really? Fucking hell.
Yeah, but one of the things that really amused me was because of the time passed since this film came out. Every time they talked about every time I saw his paintings, and then they talked about, oh, yeah, he painted my van, all I could think about was Krieger from Archer. And, Rolling Probable Cause and the Date Rape Express.
Well, the van was a bit shit, wasn't it? It's just like painted hot dogs on it and stuff. Wow, a hot dog. Oh, I can give you a lift by pulling you along on your rollerblade.
God. Oh, my gosh.
But, like, the photographer didn't... Like, basically, she whizzed past, and so she got in the photograph. Didn't explain how she was fucking illuminating pink from her. And it also, like, fair, okay, the idea of someone takes a photograph, she doesn't know who the woman is, or the photographer doesn't know who the woman is, she fucks off, it's a mystery. That's almost okay. But it's such a stupid-looking photo, and it looks crap, and it's, like, inexplicable, and it's just such a dead end. And then, as Anthony said, he just finds it by moping about being sad.
Yeah. It just, the most unlikable protagonist you could have, especially for a film this shit as well, where you need someone to latch onto. I mean, fortunately, as far as you can say that for this film, it does have Gene Kelly. And for whatever reason, he really does seem like he was enjoying himself when they made this.
Yeah.
Whether he was, if you think about his scenes in isolation, though, they weren't too bad.
Hold on. 80s costume montage.
Oh my God.
Imagine how much he enjoyed it, though.
He did seem to be enjoying himself.
Well, that's what 80s films did, didn't they?
I will admit that the campy 80s dress montage is the worst. But it is so spectacularly the worst.
It is.
The campiest.
That's another thing about this film as well, is that it's not one of those films that is entertainingly bad. It is agonizingly bad. Like, it physically hurt me to watch this film.
What I liked about that scene, I don't think it was agonizing. I think it was shit, sure.
Well, yeah.
But it was so fucking out of nowhere. It's like, oh, I need a suit. Well, you're a rich guy. You could probably just buy a suit without that being part of the film. No. That's an important scene. The rich man needs a suit because his suits currently are passable and fine. He obviously, that's for opening night, he needs a particularly shit orange suit or something.
Why are both of you two fucks complaining about the best dressed man in the room?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mr. Vesture and Mrs. Pink Dress look awful.
But, no, that montage scene was how bad I wish the rest of the film was. Because at least it was funny and fun terrible.
And it's like they just turn up at this really garish 80s shop that all the mannequins obviously come to life, and then Gene Kelly tries on outlandish clothes, and it just goes on for a while, and they dance around in the shop, and it's just so odd.
Gene Kelly, and he was like this all through the film, he was putting effort in. Yeah. Everyone else in this film was the most wooden sack of shit. the lead guy was so bad.
His delivery just made me want to strangle him.
The bit where he's rebelling against his boss, Tuesday's Wednesday. I'll tell you when it's done.
My favorite thing was when he quits. He's like,
I always wanted to say that line.
Yeah, it's just like, you guys can come to my thing, even though I've been a complete dick, you guys can come to the opening of my thing. Drinks are on me. I've always wanted to say that line.
And, like, they do. Has he even told them what he's doing? They're just like, is he having a breakdown? What's going on? What's he talking about?
Poor bastard.
I don't know why they give a shit about him, to be honest. Yeah.
Why do they like him so much?
They like him like he's not a whining bitch.
Yeah.
At least in The Warriors, he had a gang of other stroppy, anxiety-filled men to make him seem like he was cool. But in this, he's just on his own and lame, and the other artists are just like, I'm here to provide a soundboard for your words to bounce off.
Yeah, the other just meaningless characters that are in there with him.
They could have at least given... Like, this is the thing. If you've got nothing of a script, maybe just give your characters some lines to say.
But you know what? You know, give them some fucking names. Because I don't know who any of them were.
The guy with the glasses that was in the studio, I kept, like, how can I put this now? Mentally, I clung on to him so much because he was saying all of the right things, like, just tell the guy what he wants to hear, do your job. And it's like, I guess this is fine. Yeah, maybe you should talk to that girl. It's like, listen to this man. Yeah. Listen to him.
He was the voice of reason. Every whiny bitch problem the guy had, he was like, no, we'll put up with the being a bit, you know, artistically blocked, and, you know, the job isn't that bad. Just tell him you're doing something and then do what you want. Yeah. And like, it was just like, that's advice to get him through life. And the muse, all she does is kiss him, rollerblade, and dance and sing.
That's the thing as well. Like, I'm not one of those people who, you know, thrives on taking the magic out of fantasy films or anything. But this is so beyond the realm of any kind of logic, because he's an aspiring artist. He has a job in an art studio with other artists, and all he does is fucking complain about it because he doesn't have the time to be creative by himself. When he does go to be creative by himself, he can't fucking do it because he's shit. He basically has his dream job, but all he does is complain. Yeah. And then his muse comes along, twats about and flashes a minge at him and turns him into a cartoon fish.
And, then, and a bird. And a cartoon
and
man.
Then get, yeah, and then gets him to open a nightclub. And for he has no business acumen. There's no reason to believe that he'll be good at it. And then they open the nightclub. Yay, the end. 2 fucking weeks later, that nightclub would be closed down because this clueless dickhead is fucking running
it. Well, they shit money. They did maybe. I thought it was one night initially, but Abby, I think you mentioned it could be like a series of nights of performances they did. Oh, it wasn't clear. But if that many dancers, that many costumes, that much choreography, so many people making the dances and doing the music and routines, it's like, that is so much money. And we saw there was hardly a crowd. There wasn't really a people there to experience it.
Like, oh, no,
so how does it make money?
We need to spend money on really weirdly long tubular glasses with dark coloured drinks in just the bottom. Like, what? Like, and I don't think I have ever seen another film that has two characters who are supposed to be falling in love with so little chemistry.
There's no character either. Like, as soon as he asks a question, because I'm a god, I'm going to be cagey and not tell you all this stuff. And I'm just going to, I have one name. And that's it. I live in a place, and they're in love. And they're both in love with each other. They don't. We don't know them. But they don't know each other.
Yeah.
Like they're not even. You know. I mean, Olivia and John is fine, but neither of them are like, damn. Like, you know.
Another thing as well. Like, this is about 3 total strangers not asking enough questions and saying everything is fine.
Yeah.
The real hero here is Gene Kelly's character, some old man who's eccentric enough to invest in strangers' lives. I mean, he has 2 polite conversations with a guy, and he starts offering him, like, oh, you like the same music as me? Maybe we can go into business together.
Because basically, I'm a lonely old man.
Yeah. And that's the thing, he's the only one whose motivation makes sense. And it is just, he's an old man, he's lonely, and he needs something to spend his money on.
I will say, there is one scene in this film that borders on being okay. It is ruined by Olivia Newton-John, and I'm not saying this as a slight to her. I don't have a problem with her. I think the problem probably was the people making the film. But it's the scene with Gene Kelly's character and her, and he has like a... And it's really that and the scene where the two, ideas for different eras combine, and this scene where he remembers being in the big band, and there is, and I will admit it, it's a really nice shot of the big band behind him, and he's sitting in a chair facing the audience, and he's reminiscing and remembering. But the reason it's good is his performance. He really convincingly sits there and like remembers the old days, and then there's the dance number between him and Olivia Newton-John, and he choreographed that himself. Like, that scene is choreographed by Gene Kelly. And at his age, in a film this shit, he's fantastic to watch. He was a motherfucker of a dancer. But the sad thing is, Olivia Newton-John, I don't know if she was just nervous and had no one to help her because the rest of the crew were off, I don't know, it was 1980, they were probably off doing shitload of cocaine. But
do you mean there was more crew than the one cameraman?
Well, actually there wasn't in that scene, because that's what Gene Kelly insisted on. He said he wants to do that scene, but he just wants him, Olivia Newton-John, and a camera person. But she does the steps, and she hits all the marks, but stood next to Gene Kelly.
Yeah, no comparison.
Yeah, you can see. And I was watching it with my wife, which, you know, I had to apologize profusely for afterwards. But she pointed out what the problem was, because I'm not a big fan of like dance and musical movies anyway. I don't hate them on principle. I just don't usually enjoy them. But she pointed out to me what the problem was, and it was she was hitting all her marks. But there's a flair with someone like Gene Kelly.
He was good, wasn't he? You could just see he's danced his entire life, can't you?
And it's like she was hitting all the points that she was supposed to. he was also hitting all the points that he was supposed to, but with some extra animation between them.
Mm. Mm.
And it's that flow. And I made them a comparison, and this like singles me out as a nerd, but like you have professional wrestlers who are the same. You have professional wrestlers who can do all the things, but they have no charisma. And then you have someone like The Rock who can do all the things, but adds in additional animation between them. And it was one of the few times I've watched someone dance, watching Gene Kelly dance, where I actually thought, yeah, he's really good at that. And that was the only point of this film that I enjoyed anything in it.
Yeah.
But I felt so bad for Gene Kelly after that, because I was like, yeah, this was his last film.
And but also, like, he could, I even think he might have phoned that in a bit, because he's done so many. It felt like a very, now I do the tap dancing, you copy, yeah. I do it. Like, it felt very, like, paint-by-numbers, kind of simplistic idea for two people. Like, he must have done that loads of times. It couldn't have been that hard to come up with it as a routine.
Yeah.
And, but it was still better than most of the moments.
It was
fucking arbitrary that it happened. Oh. It's like, oh, we're going to meet a guy, and then we're going to spend... Like, our main character pisses off. We're left with some random guy, and it's like, I think I'll have a memory dance.
But see, at least at that point, the film was sort of justifying the dance numbers. Yeah. After that, they just start chucking them in there. Yeah. Like, fucking, oh, God. Him, what's... I don't remember the character. Sonny. Going to Xanadu when it's an empty warehouse and finding Olivia Newton-John roller skating around by herself. And she's like, oh yeah, I can practice my roller skating. And I'm like, what the fuck is this?
Why are you in a dark, shut down building doing this?
Why, if I did that, if I walked into an old abandoned building and I saw a young woman roller skating by herself, I wouldn't fucking talk to her.
You'd rip the shit out of her.
I talked to her on the assumption that she was, like, hiding from some kind of abusive relative.
She's squatting.
I would ask her from a distance if she was okay, and then I would call the police an ambulance. To come and gently coax her into the ambulance and, you know, make sure she's taken care of. Because she's going to be a fucking lunatic.
I wanted to say something about Gene Kelly that related to what you said, where he's of that generation that were a professional, no matter what, as well. Yeah. It didn't matter what the movie was. If you were chalked up to be in it, you smiled, you danced, and then you went home. So all through this, he might have hated this experience from beginning to end, but he brought his game every scene he was in.
Yeah, it was pro, like, bad movie acting, because he still did his job. Mm. I also kind of got the impression that he was at the point where he had decided he was going to retire anyway, and this was, like, a last paycheck, so he was like, fuck it, I may as well just enjoy myself.
Gonna enjoy myself, yeah. Throw
and it makes the other people look worse. As well, because he is such a professional, and the rest of them aren't.
I think it's sad to watch Gene Kelly in this, because it's just, you know, this was his last film. He deserved better. But at the same time, he'd already had a great career, so, you know, whatever.
The other people do not.
The saddest thing in this, for me, is Olivia Newton-John, because she was coming off the back of Grease. And again, I'm not a big musical fan. I don't like Grease myself, but I appreciate its place in, like, pop culture history. Like, it's an important film, and I can recognize that it's good. Like, it is well put together, and she's good in it. And this was meant to be her, like, big breakout follow-up, and just that makes me so sad for her.
A very difficult second album to get through.
And, like, the fact that... I didn't even realise it until afterwards when I read up about the film. It was promoted so heavily, and there was so much hype, and then hit the fucking...
I wonder if they got an artist to paint a big picture of the poster. I wonder what happened to that person. I feel like I want to hand it back to Anthony, because he hasn't had... We've basically been thwacking away at it. And I'd like to hear more of how... Maybe, Anthony, you thought...
Defended Anthony.
No, certain aspects you thought were could have been better, and what was the potential you saw in it, and what stuff did you like about it?
I think the ideas are there. Like, for example, the scene was atrocious, but the scene where they are kind of going through the music studio, and the kind of studio is coming down around them, and they're kind of dancing around it. It's like, that's a great idea. Like, you know, that could totally work as a, like, a quite an amazing choreographed section, but just there, it's
they kind of just rollerbladed around a crazy golf set.
So we'll put one camera in. We'll just follow them skating around. We won't make it dynamic in any kind of way.
And that's it.
It's like, no, that's how they do it on stage. This is a film. Move the camera.
That's something I got the whole time in this, is that whoever directed this was an excellent theatre director and a terrible film director.
Mm. Yeah, well, I feel like a lot of the responsibility, because that's the other thing as well, for all the colour and the fact that it's a musical and what they try and do, this is one of the fucking ugliest films I have ever watched. Like, it is hideous.
From start
to finish. It is foul looking. And a big part of that is the way the dance numbers, which are already poorly, like, I don't know if they're well choreographed or not, because the way it's shot, I can't fucking tell.
Yeah.
Because when I was watching the dance numbers, I felt like one of the dancers in the crowd who had missed a step and was looking around hoping no one had noticed me.
You at least you're engaged, Jamie. You were involved. You felt like you were part of the show. That's good.
Like, you had shots of people doing dance, and you know the dancers were putting a professional effort in because they were dancers. That's what they were there for. But the cameraman was just in amongst them. So every now and again, random dancers would just pass in front of him and block the shot.
Well, I felt to me at times like with the extra choreographed characters. It was like, is it Pan's People on the Top of the Pops? The dancers get in to kind of make up a choreography. Like, last minute, if they don't have someone on Top of the Pops, they have a bunch of, like, women and men from the 70s and 80s who do a ad-libbed choreographed dance to just be a music video instead to visually entertain you. The whole film was just like, let's make something up because the bands have bailed on us.
But I imagine that all the dancers were actually doing properly choreographed dances, but the way it was shot was so shit that you couldn't tell because it was just in... You know how people complain about the Bourne movies, the Jason Bourne movies, and how... they can't tell what's going on in the fight scenes because of the way they're filmed. They're so choppy and, like, shaky cam. But at least, and yeah, I can see why that's annoying, but at least there's justification for that because it's trying to put you in there and make it feel like you're part of the fight.
You felt like you were one of the dancers who'd missed the step, Jamie, so
yeah,
I think it achieved
that. Yeah, but it's not supposed to make you feel annoyed and
wish you turned up to
rehearsals. For some reason, ashamed.
bad, embarrassed.
I don't know. I think they weren't good, but I don't know. I think your venom for it is should be reserved for things that are truly like the worst I would say it got is kind of boring and a little bit unnecessary. Like I didn't have venom and anger towards it. I was just like, what the hell is this scene again now?
I think it's that there are many different types of terrible films. And there are terrible films that are the ones you want, the ones you like, and the ones that justifiably become cult classics are the ones that are entertainingly bad.
Schlocky but fun.
Yeah.
No Surrender 3, it's called. Well, and it's amazing.
A really good comparison for something like this is the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Actually, that's not fair, because that's not really bad. That's got a lot of good qualities to it. Like,
I suppose you're right. It's not.
It's not so bad. It's good. It's kind of different.
I think that's different. It's not bad. It's just weird. But it's. I don't know. I'm trying to think of a good example of a film that is bad, but it's made with such love and passion that
Surrender 3 is amazing. I get what you're saying. Your point is there's fun to be had with Xanadu. Yeah.
And
fingers across a chalkboard.
Yeah, you've got a film that is terrible, but it was made with such passion, and it wasn't made terrible on purpose, because that's the other class of films, and they're the ones I don't like. The ones that are made bad on, so bad it's good, like fucking Sharknado or whatever.
Sure.
Like, because that to me is lazy filmmaking. Like, that's not, there's no passion in that. It's just going, wouldn't this be dumb?
we couldn't afford to do any better, it was dumb.
So we did it bad on purpose. Remember how good Evil Dead 2 was? Yeah, but Evil Dead 2 was actually good. It was, like, schlocky and stupid, but it had, like, real passion behind it.
Right.
Whereas Xanadu is just it's the worst type of bad film because it's so boring. And even with the awful shit happening, it's dull. It's so dull.
It, just, it lacks a lot of substance because it's such a it's hung on such a poor story that it doesn't matter in a way if the music is good or the dancing is good. It's because it's like, well, how could we care about a one dimensional artist and a zero dimensional Australian roller skater?
Yeah, I will say that Olivia Newton-John had one redeeming spot in this, and unfortunately, it was in one of the worst parts of the film, which is the ending interminably long musical number.
Oh, which my is God.
Where
just kept
at one,
going.
Yeah, I know, but at one point it turns into this weird, like, hoedown with cowboys.
Oh, God, yeah.
And suddenly she's like a country singer, and it was the only point in the film where she became properly animated and enthusiastic. And I thought, man, it seems like she really just wanted to do country. And she properly got into that. And
it was the worst bit of it. I mean,
I know.
Let's try and tackle the end. Because essentially...
For me, with the last scene, it's just, okay, guys, you've waited all the way for us. Here is the final show-stopping song. It's the name of the film. It's the most famous song that's come out of this film. And here it is, and it's spectacular. And then we'll just add a little bit of this to the end, and then a little bit of this to the end, and then a little bit of this shit thing to the end. And it's like, wow, you've lost all that little bit of a momentum you left for the end, and it's just gone.
I also noticed that the beginning of Xanadu is completely inappropriate, because she says, a place that nobody dares to go.
Fucking right.
Well, there wasn't much of a crowd.
Yeah.
Well, they lacked in crowd. They had tenfold for dancers and people on rollerblades. Like the whole, like they did out this slightly funky looking, like the venue. It had a stupid top that was in the painting, but essentially it was just a serviceable old wrestling. It should have been a wrestling venue. It was one. They should have brought it back. That's what the meme should have inspired. It could be an all new wrestling venue ahead of the curve. Just before Hulk Hogan peaked, this could have been the place. Anyway, like. The point is, though, they did the place out, and it's just huge, badly laid out circles and like loads of places. It's like a very shallow skate park that goes on and on. It's not really a dance floor. There's a massive spinning light up dance floor as part of many dance floors, and they have so many people just shitting out of the walls with colourful clothes and stupid umbrellas to swing around, or props and costumes.
People on a tightrope for no reason.
Really close to the ground.
Just one bit of tightrope walking.
And like, do you know what is? And I'm sure it was completely unintentional, but that last 4 hour dance number is. That dance number captures everything wrong with the film, just in the set design, if nothing else, because there is no flow. No. It's all just ugly, shitty 80s patterns.
It didn't even mix the 40s and 80s. It was just leftover costumes from the 70s. Just terrible crap all thrown together. And like Anthony, you were saying, it starts with a memorable song-ish, and then goes, more? Yes, more! More, another type of song, they were all random. We've just edited to a costume change. No explanation if it's another day. Just we couldn't be asked to excuse the characters off stage to change. Let's have a more.
Can people see it when she does magic?
I don't know. That's the other thing. No one seems to care when there's all this like chroma keyed in fucking neon lightning shit going everywhere.
It's pretty weird. Like just generally. Gene Kelly's character, old man who's, like, I don't know, he has this whole backstory. He's the only one with a character. He's, like, an old man now in the 80s, and he was a, is it clarinet he plays?
Clarinet in a Glenn Miller band, yeah.
Yeah, and he was, like, a successful musician, and for some reason, like, I don't know, post-war, he stopped owning a club and started, he's just got really successful in real estate. But it's
no,
too...
he said it's because Kira inspired him with his musical career and she buggered off. Yeah.
But also, she also was his girlfriend and fucked him, it seems. Like, the muse doesn't just inspire them, it just fucks guys. But also doesn't stick around. It's like some kind of hooker version of Mary Poppins. It's just really weird. But like he's had a depressing story where he's lost his muse and then just becomes a successful real estate agent who can't find a venue to set up a music venue in. Like, it's his one job and he can't do it. Like the artist, it's his one job. He can't do art. He's like, does a terrible job whenever he does anything creative. But essentially, he's just playing his music on a rock. And then some prick comes up and accuses him of doing a miserable song. And then they bump into each other later at some other point after having a little conversation. And he's just like, oh, getting a record? Yeah. And then they have enough conversation to establish they have similar tastes in old music. Or, you know, later on he doesn't for some reason. Like, later on he's like, I like 80s music, even though I said I liked, you know, the bands you liked. And then it is just Olivia Newton-John's character goes, you could use this venue I've been roller skating in for no reason. yeah, and then the guys just gifts him half the company. Here, yes, we'll invest in this club Xanadu together. And yeah, I'll give you loads of money, essentially, and cut you in and make you a partner. Yeah. And let you do everything. And it's just,
if this film had any substance to it at all, there'd be this whole sort of subplot undercurrent of him not having any children and wanting to have someone to give something to.
Yeah.
There'd be something. And I kept expecting there to be some kind of, later on, tension between him and Gene Kelly in some way, because, like, they have a disagreement and then she has to, like, bring them back together to make it happen. Yeah. But no.
It's also ambiguous if he really knows Kira is the same person.
Yeah.
Yeah, like he danced, because the idea being, she has been alive for millions of years and basically fucks guys, inspires them and pisses off. And they've shared the same god. They fucked the same muse.
And he watches them like kiss and he's like, yeah. And he's like, fucking, what? Why are you happy about this? What's happening?
This is the ex-girlfriend you never got over.
Yeah.
And it is just such a weird thing, because it's all about his... Oh, now that I've got the ideal job, I've just been gifted an opportunity, and I'm quitting my job. Now I'm just upset because my new girlfriend hasn't told me where she lives, her second name, and isn't hanging around as much as I'd like her to. And it's like,
I better go talk to her dad, who is Zeus.
I better decide to do the whole men who stare at goats thing and just plough into a wall and hope I pass through. And he does, because no reason. What is that, like a portal to the Greek gods? Also, no. this film establishes that Greek gods are the correct gods and they exist.
Yeah, no, I loved its just blasé treatment of, like, Zeus totally exists with no, like, theological bent to it at all. Yeah, just like, yeah, no, absolutely.
And that Zeus sounds like Wilfred Hyde White.
Yeah, and not only that, but Sonny just goes with it. Like, he doesn't go, holy shit, I've just met God, who is apparently Zeus.
And, all I care is he lets me nail his daughter.
Yeah, please, Zeus, no. And then she sings at the camera forever. Oh, fuck.
Yeah, and then they give in. It's like, Jesus, if you're just going to be doing this all the time, you
know. I love the fact as well that they just give up.
Well, the Greek gods were very fickle. They mainly meddled in the lives of mortals because they're dicks.
It's not even that. It gets Greek history wrong, because wasn't the whole thing that they were once human and end up ascending to be gods? And isn't Hercules Zeus's son who was half human? And
there is some inconsistency within different versions of the Greek gods, but I mean, if we're going to get into whether they were accurate about a load of fucking Greek mythology horse cockery, then we're going to be here a long time, because it doesn't care about the myth
anything
at all. So the fact that we would try and pick it up on that is kind of utterly pointless.
Yeah, it gets to a point where it's pointless questioning anything in the film, because that's... Oh, and yeah, we haven't talked about the fucking cartoon scene.
Yeah, well, Abby, did you say... Abby, what did you think it was about?
Well, for a minute, because it starts off with the rose and it's blooming, you think maybe it's an allegory for sex, but then it isn't.
Well, is it though? They become cartoons. Is it like, are they fucking? Is that the idea? She's opened up her rose petals.
That's what
they've stood on them together and kissed. Then they become like...
But that's the thing.
They become
they
fish. Is that
fish?
Like... Yeah, the fish
and
represent...
And they change into birds?
No.
What's happening?
The fish represents his semen swimming into her like, you know, womb. And then they become birds, which is like an hatched from an egg. It like flies. They're chilled, like impregnated kind of thing. And then they become normal again. They roll over and go to sleep. Yeah. So I think maybe it is an allegory for sex. Anthony, what do you think? You saw the stupid cartoon. What do you think?
I think it was the 80s and they... Here's definitely what happened when this film was being made. Two executives start the night with the sentence, "So, Saturday Night Fever and Grease made a lot of money, ... several thousand lines of coke later, and the next morning they wake up like hungover with a script on their table.
And they've not only that, they've already got funding, and they're like, when the fuck did this happen?
Yeah.
They wrote the script on the back of that record that they were like, this record is a great idea for a script.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Just what the kids love. They love roller skating. Yeah, let's write that down.
Yeah, and then what else do they love? Cartoons. Yeah, throw that in too. And that's do you know it. What,
before you we tangent is... off too far, I just want to quickly throw in that there was at least one animator in the 80s who knew to make a fish look sexy.
And birds. The birds, like the girl bird was like, God, I feel like my old, it's like the whole Shana Claire from Rockadoodle. It's like, God, that female chicken is sexy.
That is a stacked hen right there.
It was the same guy, Don Bluth, who did the animation for this small section as well.
That's another feather in your cap there, Don Bluth.
What do kids love? Ugly animation that isn't Disney. Let's stick that in there.
And sexy fish. But just fucking...
That's why. There was no rhyme or reason for anything.
No.
And at the very end, in the most like full, crammed, stylistically awful, garbagey final dance shit, they just wham. They get to the point where we can't even be asked to think of a sentence to link the changing music scenes.
I know.
Let's have at least three different music routines. They're all in the one club. Xanadu's great. It sort of says Xanadu was a good idea by proxy.
Yeah.
And all we get is, so Gene Kelly sitting in the club. He meets up with Sonny.
And with his tube of drink.
It also had the audacity to have one music number be, bum, bum, bum.
Xanadu.
Xanadu.
Oh, God. Oh, my God.
But, like, Gene Kelly... Gene Kelly, though, basically stands up, cut off, like, he's cut off of frame. His last scene, and his head's not even in it. He pisses off after, essentially, I don't know, congratulating them or something.
Yeah.
And then they're left, and it's like, right, now that Olivia Newton-John, who is a muse, from one of the daughters of Zeus... She has been granted one night to come back and, I don't know, fuck this guy and open up the club. And she puts on, like, about four performances with this huge cast of people we've never met. And that are possibly imaginary. Like Gene Kelly and Sonny imagine some scenarios in the club. And they imagine these people. It's like, but they become real in the club later.
No, do you know what? You've just made the film a million times better. Because the idea that all of that is just in their heads, and it's just these two losers in an empty warehouse.
They're just fucked on the ground, twitching and thinking, "Ah, oh, yeah, this is
with nobody else there." Yeah.
But like, it's such a right. So we're a little bit worried that this muse. I mean, we don't care. We want it to end, but then it does, and it kind of pisses you off. Like, it just goes, okay. So what's happening? Is she's back for one night? She's going to love him and leave him, and the club's going to be a success, and that's going to be a dream-fulfilled sort of thing. And then she sort of magics away, and then reappears as, like, turns into a waitress, and then they, like, kiss, and they talk or something, and we can't hear them, and it just fades out to credits. It's like, wait, so what, she was real? She was granted, granted to be a human?
That was my, like, I was just left stumped, and I thought, well, have they, like, given her mortality? Is that what's going on? Why?
Also, she's a waitress. What a crap person to become.
I made myself laugh because, you know, the way it draws the end in classy old school cursive, I was waiting for a slow question mark to appear over it.
And then another music routine to kick up and be like, no!
Another 7 hours of Xanadu, which is just bum, bum, bum. Xanadu. Oh! do you know what amazed me as well? Is that my assumption was that this was made when the 80s had become, like, a peak. Like, it was full of itself. No, no, 1980.
This it was the end of the 70s, anything.
This film set the tone for the 80s.
What a horrible, gut-wrenching tone it was.
Do you know what? Like, it's amazing that it was made in 1980 and is the worst film of the 80s. That's quite an achievement. But also, you know, when people get all, like, nostalgic over the 80s and they get all... show them fucking Xanadu.
Yeah,
just go, you sit there, you watch this, and then you shut your mouth.
It wasn't all Freddie Mercury, all right?
Yeah, it wasn't all the fucking shit you see in Vice City. It wasn't all Scarface and... because it was also fucking Xanadu.
Sorry, Anthony. We've been very enthusiastic.
No, I'm not fucking sorry at all.
We've just took your suggestion and tore it apart.
Don't be under the impression that I think this is a good film in any way.
It's not only that, Anthony. Surely,
yeah. It's considered. It's considered like it's one of those films that, in the trivia, at least according to IMDb, was like the gay community like took hold of it. So this is your. These are your options, Anthony. It's Cruisin' or Xanadu. Pick a side.
Are they both from 1980 as well?
No. Same year. Oh yeah, they were. Didn't Cruising come out in 1980?
Yeah.
Do you think you have to pick right now?
Well, no. Do you know what? I think Xanadu. When IMDb talks about that, I think Xanadu is what like Xanadu and Cruising are what really homophobic people imagine. Get the gay lifestyle is like.
It's like hard bondage. They're like murderers and dirty, hypocritical guys.
Awful neon.
And then, like, I don't know, like the camp singy song ones are like the most tedious, insufferable assholes.
I actually, to remedy watching this film, the same.
Took a Xanax.
I watched it in the afternoon, and then that night I watched the Rocky Horror Picture Show because. It made me think of the Rocky Horror Picture Show, but in my head I was like, no, because the Rocky Horror Picture Show is entertaining. So I watched
Jimmy,
but that's the thing, you watch this and you think, I really wish I was watching the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah, the Rocky Horror Picture Show is an ugly film, but in a really fascinating kind of way.
It's a little bit, it's like cabaret goth weirdness. Whereas is just like Sherbet has been punched into the faces of roller skaters.
It just occurred to me. This film came out in 1980. But he keeps banging on about how, oh, this is so 80s. And it's like, that hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
So, what are you talking about? But were they trying to not be a film that isn't dated by somehow future-proofing it by saying it's something that hasn't happened yet?
I know, I just... Fuck, I
well, see, he does mention, oh, let's have like 80s rock and roll music. It's like, what do you mean? Like, literally, oh, so it's got synths and like, what do you mean? Because there's been like 10 minutes of 80s music that we can draw our influence from. You mean, can it be a bit more 70s, is what you mean? Weird.
It's just,
do we want to get to the rating or do we want to curse at it some more or. Other bits? Is there any...
Yeah, little... just other bits. Like, one thing that's sticking in my mind is a really unnecessary scene where she tries to convince him that she's a muse by doing it through TV show.
Yeah, what the fuck? It's also really baffling.
And again, weirdly, trip. Like, I'd rather watch that weird TV show than the film.
It's like a gangster, like James, like it's like a Cagney kind of gangster film, and they start addressing Sonny himself. As if they're, like, one of them's a bit confused, like, who he's talking to.
Well, isn't that one Gene Kelly, the one in the hat with the gun?
Ah, right.
And then, I swear the other guy is James Caan with a fake moustache on.
Oh, it's bloody baffling. Whatever. Oh, no. Yeah, it's like a muse has magical powers. Like, what the fuck are they saying? Like, she has the ability to warp reality. Like, what? That doesn't really play into it. She has the ability to roller skate and dance and sing.
Yeah, she doesn't fucking use any of these powers in any significant way. She just does it to fuck with people.
And why this novet?
Plus, before this, the only thing she's actually done is just appear and disappear.
Yeah.
Kiss him.
So, but then all of a sudden, she has, like, all the magic in the world.
Like, if some fucking bint turned up and started doing the shit she does to him, after about, I don't know, a day, she would turn up and I would say, fuck off.
No,
just confusing and upsetting me. Go away.
Yeah, just a cock tease or something. What's also weird is no one addresses her Australian accent.
Yeah.
It's like, why do you have an Aussie accent? Surely if you're a god, you can have whatever...
Well, maybe she just likes the Aussie accent.
Just sounds good. Slightly clawing.
I don't know, I like the Aussie accent. It's a
fine accent. I just think it was a bit weird without explanation somewhere in California.
Or the daughter of a Greek god appearing in California to have an Australian accent. Yeah, you're right.
Now I
think it through, like much of this film.
You just think about anything for a second, you instantly wish you'd done loads of cocaine as well.
Oh, God. And there's so much. There's so much wrong with it.
Other scenes. Anyone else? Anthony, you got any more? Or Abby, or whatever? We covered the main points. There's just, every now and again, you'll watch, if anyone bothered to watch it again, you'd just be like, oh, another thing, this little bit is dumb. Like, just little things.
I think there are a lot of problems, like we say. I was about to say, if they'd written the lead character a bit more sympathetically, it would be good. If they'd just written.
I honestly can't think of another film bad enough to make me passionately angry.
I put this in the same category as Rock and Rule, JB, which you picked a while ago. Very 80s, very pastel music.
Yeah, you're right.
It actually has a plot, though, doesn't it? It's a bit stupid.
Yeah, I was going to say, Rock and Rule is a stupid, ugly film.
Yeah.
But it's kind of background noise. Like, when you tune out of it, you just kind of forget it's there. Xanadu is so aggressively terrible.
The music got stuck in my head when I was falling asleep as well.
You try and leave the room and it fucking follows you around the house.
All right. It's horrible. Right. I think JV has given us enough material to rate it. I think that it's clear what you thought. I don't think we need another rating unless you have something special in the bag.
If just to be concise, this film is, to me, going to go come back to Event Horizon again. After watching this film, it's like when Jack Noseworthy wakes up from his coma and tries to throw himself out of the airlock.
Right.
Because of the trauma he suffered from seeing the other side.
Okay.
I have one.
You could?
I can't remember what it's called, but it's that game you play where someone writes down the first line of something, then you fold the piece of paper, you pass it on to the next person, then they write something, you know, fold it, pass it on.
And then after a while, they stop doing it and they just insert an ELO album and it just becomes songs in a row.
But when you unfold it, one or two people are witty, so what they've written down is kind of funny.
Gene Kelly has written a good bit in there.
Yeah.
Or somebody else has, done a really interesting image of something.
Somebody else has just wiped their ass with it.
Yeah. So, this is what Xanadu is, where it's basically randomly generated, and it's just one or two things in there worth, because there was one person who was actually... Yeah.
And then what happens is some movie executives take that bit of paper, roll it up, and do another line of coke with it.
It is... It's interesting that you say generator, because this is like... Someone found a website online where you just put 80s cliches in it and it just generates something out the other end.
Right. Anthony, what do you want to say as your final thoughts on it?
I will say, I see potential. Mm. I see a lot of potential and where did it go? Like, how could you screw this up so badly? I've got an analogy to come at the end for this, but because...
It's such a crying shame.
Squandering Gene Kelly like that.
I like the idea about the film being about art and artists and inspiration and kind of how that plays out and like what happens when you lose inspiration and stuff like that.
Hmm.
And I can see it now. If it was made this year or something, I could see it being really a really interesting, well thought out film. And, I would at some point in the future, if I ever get, mega rich and influential, I want to remake this film to what it should be. Because you've got, a soundtrack by ELO. You've got some half-decent songs. You've hired really good dancers. The choreography is fine. The sets, they've obviously put a lot of effort into it and a lot of money. They've got stupid costumes, but there's a lot of them and there's a lot of variety.
Mm.
But there's no script. The director doesn't know what he's doing. The cinematographer might as well be asleep.
Yeah. It's well, you need motivation. So the main problem, we've got a muse who's giving inspiration to someone who's a dickhead and hasn't got a problem. So if the artist needs to be maybe a down and out, he doesn't need to be successful and not like, oh, just a bit of a yuppie twat. So he needs to be in a hard place. He needs the area they need to rejuvenate needs to be full of crime and like sad kids and people who need something to help them through their life. It needs to be life affirming. Muses are meant to inspire to make people do good things and create beautiful art, not make crap people do a crap thing that's boring and dumb, yeah. You know?
Yeah, so that leads on to my analogy, which was this film was happening and it was fine, and then instead of Zeus sending out a muse, Hades sent out some weird kind of muse demon in order to fuck the whole thing up. And so this film has been touched by, like, minions of the devil and is just...
This film has
horrible.
Been touched by Satan.
Yeah. So it's been touched by reverse muses, if you will.
Has the power of evil inside it.
Instead of making it perfect and beautiful, it's just made it the most utter shit.
Right. Okay. Well, I that's good. I mean, I'm struggling with my one. I somehow want to link the fact that he plays a clarinet to Squidward from SpongeBob SquarePants. But I think the quality of SpongeBob and even Squidward is too high to really draw any sort of comparison. I think we've kind of said it all. I could just, you know, scrambling for anything. It's someone has, you know, smashed. They've took an 80s art canvas and smashed up some Smarties into some cocaine and snorted it off the back of a cheap prostitute they've imagined. And, like, you know, it's a load of old rubbish. It's just clearly colourful pap that's meant to fill your ears. And, I think it's just crap music videos back to back. And they've squandered a lot of good stuff. So it's just fucking a big old pile of shit.
One of
rolled in glitter.
I think the problem that we have is that you can talk about this film forever, but you cannot express how bad it is without just devolving into primal screaming. Like, I think the most accurate podcast for us would have just been an hour and a half of all of us just screaming wordlessly.
The only thing I agree that it's, like, it squandered a lot. I don't know that it could have, like, it's so poor, I don't know how, like, even if, Anthony, you remade it and used the budget with respect and came up with some ideas, it's still such a bad idea to hang everything off of. I mean, the muse idea is okay. I mean, just the fact that, how would you change Xanadu from being a club, like, to something interesting? It's just such a boring concept, and it's so dodgily executed. It's just, why bother?
Yeah.
They didn't make the stage musical as well. They actually went, oh, I like it enough to make it on the stage, which is...
I know.
Baffling. It is kind of for the stage. I think, Abby, you said you can understand it being a stage musical in a sense.
Mm. A lot of the stuff they did is really high-end theatre production.
Yeah.
But not a film. It's not a film at all.
No.
Hard going.
Like I said before, it is kind of filmed like it's just being performed on stage a lot of the time. Mm. So, and apparently the theatre version is a bit more of a pastiche of the whole thing. It's going like, remember Xanadu? That was shit, wasn't it? Oh, yeah.
That's what it needs.
Yeah.
It's awful. But
that's what that's about.
I think it's kind of aspiring to sort of... cabaret, where it's you know, we don't have a good reason for all the music routines because they're all so the setting is a club, and then but you know what's great about cabaret is they have really interesting character plot in between randomly selected songs and stuff, and the songs are kind of there to help spell out the meaning of the film as well. Like, the cabaret is beautifully sewn together, but it's essentially a similar idea. It's about a club. It's about a couple of people who fancy each other but have problems. And, you know, there's loads more complexity and interesting things in cabaret. And it's a little bit about yuppies as well. Like, but cabaret just understands how to sew a filmic narrative together. And, you know, does everything else right as well. But, like, Xanadu just... it's talentless crap that squandered potential. It's a shame. Shame on you.
I'm angry and sorry for everything to do with this film and everything around it and the effect it's had on my life.
And we can only apologise for extending the myth of Xanadu by doing a podcast about it.
Yeah, advice from, I think, all of us. Don't watch it. Not even out of curiosity for bad films. Just don't fucking do it to yourself. It's not worth it.
The only thing I would say is maybe watch the clip of Gene Kelly's dance routine with Olivia Newton-John on YouTube.
Yep. That's it. That's the only bit worth anything. Don't even watch it in a so bad it's good. No. Stay the fuck away from it. It's toxic waste.
You don't need to know how low the bar can get.
No, you don't. You don't need to experience it.
Watch Pan's People on Top of the Pops. That's about the length you need. Like, that's a little bit irritating. 3.5 minutes of them is what all this film is stretched out to be.
If you have children, make sure you go to their like Christmas play performances. Because not only is it important for their development as people, it is more worth your time than the time I wasted sitting watching this shit.
Oh dear. Also, always listen to old men on rocks playing the clarinet. They will invest in your future.
Yeah, they will. They'll give you a shitload of money.
Yeah, don't even have to be nice. Just be like, oh, did you play something less fucking shit, mate? Yeah. Whatever. Anyway, goodbye.
Bye.